Today on the Jim Core Show, a very special guest from the Late Show and Bar Jars, Tony Martin.
Hello, Tony, you there?
Yes.
Hi, Tony, how are you doing?
Good.
It's 8 o'clock in Melbourne. What time do you normally go to bed?
Oh, 2 in the morning.
Really? You're one of those late night kind of guys? Yeah.
The work gets done.
If you weren't doing this, what would you have been doing?
I'm talking to myself, walking around my house talking to myself because I have a fringe show that opens on...
I think I saw an ad for this.
Tuesday night. So,
all right.
Yeah, I've got to talk in 8 different voices for 50 minutes. So,
straight stand-up or sketches?
No, it's an adaptation of a story from one of my books.
Oh, which one? Lolly Scramble or...
It's from that one. It's a story called The Yeti, about the German landlord.
I'm not sure. I remember reading it. I've actually got a paperback copy of that book. I don't know if that's rare or not.
Well, that's the only one. No, it was never in hardcover. It's never that posh.
No, but now all your books are in digital, which is...
Oh, yes.
But I've actually got a paper copy of it. And because I bought Scarcely Relevant a little while ago, and I was gutted I couldn't get it in paperback because I don't like to read it from digital.
Well, no. I did try and pitch that around as a book, but I kept being told by publishers that, oh, people don't want to read short things, that many short things.
I don't know,
70 chapters or 50 chapters or something. And I just kept being on public transport and seeing people reading books on their phones. And I was thinking, well, that's when you would want something short. So I just didn't, in the end, I just put it out myself as an e-book.
Yeah, well, it's not a bad idea. It was pretty cheap, $6, I think.
Actually,
I bought a DVD double collection of Cracker Jack and Bad Eggs for, I think, $8.50.
So you mean the Cracker Pack?
The Cracker Pack. How much input do you have on something like that?
Well, nothing, because I didn't even know that was coming out, so I think I saw it at Big W, but I was just concerned that they didn't include the booklet. Because I think there's a joke on the back and the punchline concerns the booklet, and I think what they did is they dropped the booklet after so many DVDs and then they just cut that joke out, so this whole bit on the back doesn't have a punchline. What? Sorry, this is the kind of minutiae that, you know, my job entails getting involved in.
Well,
getting too worked up about
putting in jokes that don't make sense anymore are kind of your trademark, because I was actually, obviously before the interview, I was listening, watching the Late Show, Champagne Edition, also the Bar Jars and Golden Years DVDs, and there are jokes in there that I just lost in the, like the start of the Late Show with the tracking, the VCR tracking.
Yeah, it's like an antique joke.
It's
from the past. It's like when you see, you know, a telex machine. And I was watching a film recently. And someone came urgently running in, going, "I've just received a telex." I'm going, "What was a telex? Was that before? Was that after telegrams and before faxes? I can't quite remember."
No, I didn't even know what one of those is. That's what's crazy. But I'm amazed you didn't know what Skype was when I mentioned Skype.
I sort of know, but I've never seen it or used it, or, you know, bothered to work out what it's for.
I understand it.
Most people I ask, what do you use it for? Is it so that you can use a picture phone? They go, no, it's so we can use the phone for free.
Yeah, that's probably its primary function. How long have you been in Melbourne for? Because if your Twitter's anything to go by, you've been in, what, England recently?
Yes, I was in England for 3 months working with Ross Noble on a show called Freewheeling, which I think is on in late October over there.
And that's just what, you guys over there for 3 months just screwing about with the camera, I suppose?
Well, it was it was pretty exhausting because it was, the filming was for six weeks, one episode a week, and the entire show was generated by Twitter. It was just from tweets.
All right.
So we had literally just Ross Noble on a motorbike and then 14 of us in 3 vans following him round. And whatever people said to do on Twitter, he would do. So I think the production company thought, yeah, that's just a gimmick. He'll really have prepared the entire thing. But that's not how Ross Noble works.
Not at all.
So it was insane. It was lunatic.
I couldn't help notice there's a photo you've got of an old... of a record store, but also you've got, like you said, there was this really good CD store and now it's just a shell of itself.
That was I think that was the saddest photo I've ever taken. It
looked pretty sad.
It's the HMV shop in Oxford Street, which if you've ever been there, it was amazing. And the CD, well, the two floors of CDs, I remember spending like 6 hours one day just going, trying to think of the most obscure album I could. And they'd not only have it, they'd probably have some fancy special edition of it. And then that was in 2011. And then going back about two and a half years later, and it was only one third full. It's really sad.
And I take it it's the same way with video stores. I mean, there used to be a lot here. Now it's hemorrhage. There used to be about eight around my area. Now there's maybe one, two.
Oh, yeah. And you don't want to be, the old person going, it was better when everything was horse-drawn. But it's just...
I just miss the scrolling through the videos, the walk through the video store and finding a hidden gem, a crappy film that has somehow slipped through the cracks.
Yeah,
and I think you're famous for this.
Element too, which is harder. I mean, you don't really go looking for...
No.
I don't know, maybe people do. But, it's a different kind of thing.
Because the last great story I've got of that is I went to a local library, a university library, and they actually have VHS tapes. So that was, that was great.
Oh, okay.
And I actually I actually found a copy of The Late Show Presents The Devil at Your Heels. Do you even remember this tape?
Yeah, I think that's subsequently come out on DVD.
Right, with The Late Show bits or just the documentary itself?
That whole program as is.
Right.
I think we just did an intro. I mean, that was live.
You're on it for maybe 2 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually after our show. We did the show live from 10 till 11, and then Santo had found that documentary
awesome.
In the state the state library in Victoria.
Oh.
And it was that thing where I think he was just reviewing it.
Right.
Like it was a thing where let's get a celebrity to review their five favourite things from the state library. And he found that, and there was very little paperwork on it, and he contacted the maker of it, and the guy... It was a Canadian guy who said no one had contacted him about that film since like 1981.
It's the best. I think it's one of the best documentaries out there as well.
And this is 1993, so it was about 12 years. He heard it from nobody. Nobody was interested in showing it in any form. He couldn't even understand how a copy had got to Melbourne.
Right.
And so we were so into it, we wanted to show it on TV. But I remember the ABC wouldn't let it. They were worried that it was too long and boring. And so I think when it was shown on TV, it had something like half an hour cut out of it.
Right. Well, yeah, I had this VHS copy. It seems to, because I've watched both that and then I caught it on YouTube for free. So, but I think the VHS version I had the whole
documentary. Oh, yeah, no. When we put it out, we put out the full version.
Oh, well, I'm just shocked because I was like, The Late Show made a film? I was like, oh, my. All right, you got to see this.
Because the cover is orange.
Because I thought it would be like a shit scared movie or something.
That's right. For a second, you think it's going to be
like
a Viva Knievel, but
yeah,
with Rob.
It would have been all right, but it was a pleasant surprise nonetheless. But
No, that's still around. I've seen that at, I don't know if you have Dixon's over there, but if you can find that. It's probably still possibly even available through the ABC shop, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't tend to go into the ABC shop that often.
Nobody knows where it is.
No, they're very rare, and they sometimes sell stuff that's not even on the ABC. I went by the other day, they're selling Downtown Abbey, that's on Channel 7. But
yeah, well, that's it. I saw Beverly Hills Chihuahua at my ABC shop.
There you go. But the reason why I set this whole thing up because I'd like to play Barjas on the radio, and I don't know if Barjas would work just audio on the radio, but
it's worth a crack.
We're going to try. I think it'd be pretty funny. I mean, I think you'd have to have seen it and then just listen to the lines.
Yeah, it would be quite. I mean, I don't think I've ever tried listening to it. That would be largely mystifying. Aren't there long visuals?
they're extreme.
The train goes past,
and I think also my favorite bit of Barjas, where he's in the chair. He corrects himself, farts, does it again, farts again, gets up, farts again, goes to pick up the paper, bends down to pick up the paper, and farts again. End of scene. That's probably the...
But I think that was there a reason for that beyond the obvious? I think it was because there was some punchline, wasn't it? Wasn't there...
I just watched it this afternoon. I swear to God, there's no punchline.
That's
there is none.
Great.
It comes in, he wakes up in the chair, and then he gets the paper, and then cuts to another thing.
No. Really? Because it's so long ago since I even saw it. But, isn't there something with Tim Bowden, though? Didn't we edit in Didn't we get Tim Bowden, who was the host of Back Chat, which was the show you used to... It was a little 10-minute show on the ABC that...
Yes, he's in a wig. No, that's different. He's sitting there watching that. He's wearing the wig, and then he goes like, here's my response, and he farts. But no, that different scene, again.
It is. I think that people do remember Barshaz as being just this non-stop farting festival.
Well, it gets... But you can really tell.
Towards the end, there's that Kawa. I mean, there's probably only 10 farts in the whole show.
Yeah, not that many, but they're all concentrated in that last half, because you can tell you did 10, right? The first five or so, and then the last five, you guys went crazy with the noises, but it's very good. The fishtail moment, but I like the chair.
The way we would write those is that we would... And we did it with the olden days, and then also before that with Homicide. We would never watch the real sound, so we'd get the show.
Yeah, you mentioned this on the commentary.
No, it's actually a really good discipline to do, because it makes... Because with that guy front bottom,
yep.
I never heard his voice for a year. I just would watch it with the sound down and imagine that what... And when you hear his real voice, it's nothing like what he was doing. And so you... Because the way you write those is if you watch it with the sound down, part of your brain is trying to work out what they're actually saying and read their expressions. And you can read it completely the opposite of what it actually is.
Yeah, right.
But then it's also not consecutive shots, usually. Almost every time there's a cut in any of those, you're often cutting to a different episode.
Right.
So we would have to log everything.
I'm just thinking you guys must have been... It was you, Santo, and Mick, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and it was 12-hour day. We'd get there at 9 in the morning.
On a Monday, if I'm not mistaken.
On a Monday and go home at 9 at night, and we never left. And then sometimes...
If you had to rate...
We had 6 seconds of footage.
If you had to rate who did the most work to the least work...
Oh, no, it was all... Everyone was talking. There was no, shift work. It was everyone talking over each other, trying to come up with it. But I had the job of...
Scribe.
Of writing it all down and also then editing it. And it was edited in a very unusual way, because we had to get the episodes. We had to borrow the episodes from Crawford's, whoever it was, on these giant one-inch tapes. And then I would hang around and videotape, because we weren't budgeted for a lot of this stuff.
No.
So I'd hang around and just blag an hour with an editor and go from one-inch machine to one-inch machine. It's this huge, primitive...
And are they reels, film reels, or they're tape?
Yeah, they're like giant... So if you can imagine a roll of sellotape from Land of the Giants,
yep.
Like that. It's a giant tape, really heavy.
Well, now, have you ever thought about doing it now? Because now that it's digital, I'd imagine you could do that...
It'd be easy. I mean, you see people are doing things on YouTube in that genre.
But they're not as good.
Well, no. Well, I couldn't say whether that's true or not, but what I do notice is if you do it that really slow way, you spend more time thinking about it.
Right.
You'll be watching one line
over
and over again, whereas if you can edit it quicker, which you could do on Final Cut Pro, surely you're just going to do the whole process quick. It was the painfully slow process that allowed you so much thinking time.
Sure.
Well, I don't know. I feel like I'm over... I'm talking a bit too seriously about what, as we heard earlier, is a series of fart jokes.
Good point. That's true. But I was thinking how... In the director's commentary, you talk about a film called Rainbow, which I've never been able to get my hands on, which is a...
You'd be able to get that anywhere if you get, that still has VHSs. I mean, that was at every video shop.
Yeah, I must have skipped. Man, must have missed.
It's called Son of Rainbow.
Son of Rainbow, I think.
It's not very good.
No.
As far as I know, Woody Allen invented this with that What's Up Tiger Lily.
What's Up Tiger Lily?
Which I think began as something that wasn't even meant to go to air. It was like a party thing he used to do. He'd have friends around and they'd turn down rent a movie, turn the sound down, and do their own dial, as everyone has done at some point in their life.
Yeah, true.
But, I mean, there was them, and then, what was it, Rambo? There was a couple more. There were a few more examples of it. But when we did it for Homicide, all we knew about was Woody Allen. We hadn't seen Rambo.
Did you see the Woody Allen documentary on the ABC? Parts 1 and 2?
Yeah, I think, yes.
Like it?
I thought it was good. I thought it sort of accelerated towards the end.
The second part was...
So comprehensively, but then by the end, they
fell over.
There was about 8 films they didn't even yeah. mention. So.
Yeah, the first part was really, really good. And then I thought the second part just kind of, as you say, just glossed over. It was just midnight in Paris, and then he's still alive.
That's right.
The story.
And you just go, yeah, the best stuff was all that early TV and stuff, because there was a lot of, I once went to the Museum of Old TV Shows, whatever it's called, in New York, and you can just, you rent it, you don't rent a tape, you request it, and the old lady takes a little typed card out of a wooden drawer and then hands you, you know, something, a number, and you can go into these little booths and watch these shows that you can't see anywhere else in the world. And there was just so many interesting Woody Allen TV shows.
Well, I had a tape, I had a cassette tape that I listened to a lot. Woody Allen Nightclub Years, 1964 to something like that. And that was a really, that's probably one of the best recorded stand-ups, in my opinion, anyway, if, especially for that time. So that's
That is a double album reduction of his three albums. And if you look around, you can still get the whole three albums sometimes at second-hand shops. And one of them has a bit that isn't on that Nightclub Years thing, and it's where he's just doing Q&A with the audience, and it's really funny because he's clearly making it up. But the thing I found at this place in New York is, it's like he used to host the Tonight Show,
right?
And did heaps and hours and hours and hours of television. It would be fascinating to get all that and make some sort of compilation.
While we're talking about going back, I wonder, why isn't the Late Show in syndication? Why aren't there reruns on the ABC?
I don't know.
Because, like, I remember hearing something about how you used to do the countdown segment where you would.
Well,
but ABC owns Countdown, so I wouldn't have thought there'd be a problem.
Do they? I'm not sure if they do.
Maybe they don't.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Once it's compiled into a show, I'm not sure. It was only ever shown live, and then there was these specials that were edited.
And then the DVD. And the DVD you compiled, am I right?
Yeah, I think me and Santo did the first, did some of it. I did the DVD, but it was very frustrating because, what's represented on those DVDs and VHSs is really just the sketches.
Yeah.
I don't even think that was the funniest bit. I think the funniest bit of the show was Commercial Crime Stoppers.
Right.
And there's none of that on any of the DVDs. So.
Right.
You know, I would review those films, and there was Countdown, and we would show, weird things from, using clips from movies.
Yeah.
And so,
I have never seen a late show. I've only seen the.
Well, I think the reason that everyone in it is quite happy for it not to be.
Yeah. Well, there are times like Santo the Magnificent. I watched that, and I thought, if this ever goes really bad on live TV, this.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of terrible stuff in there. Because you had to fill an hour, and often the hour blew out to 70 minutes every week. And, as we always used to say, you get to Thursday and you do the maths and you go, we've only got 45 minutes. There was inevitably some rubbish in there. But also it was very technically, not having a go at the vision switching department, but it was technically quite a complicated show to do live. And the equipment, I remember when you had to trigger a roll, as they said, when you had to throw to a clip, it was so laboriously slow, because I remember it was like there was a guy in videotape who had to cue another guy in the newsroom who had to push a button on a cassette. So it was like, there was a 3-second lag. So you would go, let's have a look at that footage now, and you want it to come in there, and it would be. And so we got used to always having more phrases. So let's have a look at that footage now. We'll see that coming through any second now, and here it is. So if you were to see the unedited shows, all that shit, it would be in there. It would be quite cringe. It would be really awful for us. It would probably be fascinating and entertaining to everyone else.
Something I noticed about the Bar Jars DVDs, you go into that, they're about, it is Easter egg emporium on that DVD.
Yeah,
there are Easter eggs everywhere, because I'd only ever seen the, it's a good, but it's no Strzelecki. I'd only ever seen that on the very intro of, I think, Volume 3. And then to see the Australian auteur, the full thing, I finally figured out exactly what that meant. I always found it a funny line, but it just sat on the wind. I never knew what it was. So, but you're big on DVD commentaries, am I right?
Well, they've sort of fallen from favour.
I love them.
There are so many dull ones and so many ones with long gaps, and And so, you know, even film buff friends of mine go, oh, I never listen to the commentary. But when you hear a good one...
What's a good one?
John Waters on Crybaby. He never runs out of things to say. I heard that one recently.
I got one. Tom Shadyac on Liar Liar. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, well, he's had some kind of rebirth.
Oh, you heard about... Have you seen his film? It's called...
No,
like,
I haven't
been able to get a copy of it either, but it sounds pretty weird.
Well, yeah.
He had like a cycling accident or something.
You never know who's going to be on a good commentary. A friend of mine was watching Brideshead Revisited, the TV series, and there was like a commentary by the producer, this guy called Derek Granger. I'm going, oh, that wouldn't be very interesting. And it was hilarious.
Really? Well, Judd Apatow does a lot of that stuff too. He's kind of comparable to the Late Show DVDs. He just throws out a heaps of stuff. Did you do it mindfully? Because commentaries and special features are really there to, in a way, hopefully stop piracy, is the theory behind the creation of...
Few of us were just big fans of the...
Right.
I mean, it's...
Because Bad Eggs has two.
Yeah, well, that's got... I think that broke the record for the most amount of stuff you could fit in before having to reduce the quality of the film.
There is a 65-minute making-of documentary, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, well, it's... I mean, it's the novelty of DVD extras has gone away. But there was, you know, there was a 5 or 6 or 7 year period where it was like, whoa, what are the extras? Now people don't really care.
Because I remember you tweeted about how Ed Wood, you know, the Tim Burton films got it.
Yeah.
And that had special features. But I've actually got a copy and I don't think it was different from the ones that I have. But I would rebuy a film if I thought the features were good enough.
Right. I was probably pushing the Blu-ray because I'm quite a... you know, a fan of the Blu-ray, so I...
The actual technology of it.
Yeah, I just think it's the best format so far for watching films at home. And the thing is, I sound like a salesman, but it's, you know, I was watching what's great about that, you know, that thing Apple TV?
Yeah.
What's amazing about that is if you dig down into their archives, they've got a lot of films on HD, which aren't out on Blu-ray.
Like, yeah, I see.
The Parallax View, that would be one.
Right.
And you just go, oh, that might never come out on Blu-ray. So yeah, I was watching one of them on someone's Apple TV, and you can see the compression. Even though you're watching HD, it's still not, still doesn't look as good as Blu-ray.
Right.
But, you know, sorry, this is
nerdy,
but I don't know. I still think that of every format I've seen for watching, particularly an old film, in your lounge room, Blu-ray seems to be the best so far.
Right. What kind of TV do you have?
Oh, I don't have a particularly fancy... I just have a pretty normal TV.
Full HD,
I haven't got like a... Yeah, I've got an HD one, but I haven't got the super giant one. I was watching Glenn Roberts, in fact, said you've got to go down and have a look to JB and have a look at... Is it the 80-inch?
Yeah, it's pretty big.
And they run the Avengers on it because they think, oh, the Avengers.
Yeah.
And the Avengers looks terrible. Well, you can see all the makeup on people's faces. The effects look really...
Really? That's what's good when old films get re-released on Blu-ray. Like I was watching Die Hard 3, actually, when he is on the truck in the water tank, in the aqueduct.
Yeah.
And it is clearly not Bruce Willis. And there's just all these moments where it's like, that's not Bruce Willis. True Lies, where he's sliding down backwards, firing at the guys on the ski.
Right.
It's just clear as day. That is not Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I don't know if I like the re-release of old films, especially action on Blu-ray. It's funny because I had to kick someone out of the studio. I was like, listen, I've got a call coming. You know, I have to answer this call. It was like Die Hard 3, you know, when Samuel L. Jackson's got to pick up the phone and the cops like holding him in the subway. And it was exactly like that. But I don't know.
I see.
Was that, you're a fan of that film?
Is that Die Hard 3 with a vengeance?
Yeah.
Didn't it have a really poor ending with a boat blowing up?
Well, have you seen the alternate ending?
No.
Oh, there was a thing on... I think it was IGN.com. Do you know IGN?
Yes.
Yeah, well, they had this thing where they had the best alternate endings to films, and I think I Am Legend was one with Will Smith. Have you seen that film?
No.
Oh, well, he's a zombie guy, and in the theatrical version, he just creates a cure, end of story. But in the other version, it turns out that he was a scientist, and he was, like, testing on a dead zombie or something, and they were just coming to get that zombie back. You know, they weren't actually... Oh, no, I've ruined the film for you. I'm sorry. Anyway, it was an alternate version. But Die Hard 3... Because you know what happens, they basically catch Jeremy Irons in the story, but in the alternate one, he gets away. Jeremy Irons gets away and he goes back to Germany. and Bruce Willis tracks him down, and they're doing a roulette, a game of Russian roulette with a rocket launcher, and they're asking, you know how Simon says he does the riddles?
Yeah.
And they're going back and forth with these riddles with this Russian roulette with the rocket launcher, and it's a really much better ending, and I don't know why they didn't go with it.
Mystifying.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Bad Eggs. Let's go back to Bad Eggs. I really want to talk about this, because this is a film that just... you got it made, right? So you wrote it?
Yes.
And how long did it take to write it?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
Long time?
It was a reasonably long time, yeah.
And enjoyable writing process?
Yeah, it was quite good. It was just a chance. There was an opportunity to get some money to make it what would be called a genre film. So,
right.
There was it was quite an unusual idea for a film, and a lot of people don't get it. And
well, David Stratton is one. Did you ever listen to his review or read the review of it that he gave?
He gave it 3 stars.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Going, you know, it could have been worse. It wasn't as good as Bootmen, which he gave 4 to. It wasn't as good as Muggers or Siam Sunset or Cut. All of which got 4 from David Stratton.
Well, here's the thing. He just rubbishes the thing. I've got the review on the tape, and I'll actually play it.
You brought me onto a show to read bad reviews from old films. Wasn't I here to talk about Bar Jars? What is this?
We'll get back to Bar Jars, but...
I don't want to hear you read out a bad review to me.
Sorry.
Let's not do that.
Okay, let's not then. But, I mean...
I'll close up myself.
Did you ever think about putting yourself in that film?
Well, I am in that film.
As sort of a tag team duo, Mick Molloy, Tony Martin.
No, because I was directing it. So I just don't quite understand how. I'm always mystified as to how people can direct a film when they're one of the main characters.
Right.
But when I've asked around, I've discovered huge numbers of assistants.
Right.
That's what when we don't have that here.
Oh, right.
So, you know, I don't know. And I wouldn't have felt... It was like a particular kind of leading man you wanted. The idea was to have 2 people who were very inactive, possibly sedentary.
Sure.
The kind of people who don't move very much, who speak in a very low-key way, so that you could... take the exact opposite of an action hero, although someone who still works in the law,
right?
And then just drop them into an overstuffed sort of action scenario, or at least as much of one as could be afforded for $4 million. So,
because I noticed
it's quite a particular idea. I don't think you would have wanted to. I don't think it would have worked if it was me and Mick Molloy.
Right,
been, you know, because different kind of film.
In the commentary, you talk about how. There's a cardboard wall, which kind of breaks the fantasy of the film. But when they go to Juice Lucy's house and it's been burnt down or something, and you're talking about the cardboard.
Oh, yeah, no, we couldn't afford to blow. We couldn't afford to blow up a house, and which would have been great.
That
and we
been
couldn't
great.
Afford to. Digital effects weren't good enough at that time.
What year was
on our budget?
What year was Bad Eggs?
Pardon?
What year was Bad Eggs?
It was made in 2002.
Right, so it's still.
So now you
there.
Can do, I mean, you know, Newstopia, which was made on a tiny budget. I remember seeing a guy who worked on that called Scott Zero, who does digital effects. And, you know, he was just on a laptop, basically, was doing, I remember he blew up a car, and it was so convincing. I thought, I'm sure, blowing up a car, how can you afford that digital effect? Whereas you can't, you know, if we'd wanted to blow up Judas Voice's apartment block, it would have been about, you know, $100,000 in those days.
Yeah, that's too bad. That would have been awesome, though.
So, yeah, a cardboard wall it was.
Who made the cardboard wall? Did...
It was made by a man called Ben Morrison, and he was helped by a man called Stephen Travers and Carrie Kennedy. She would have made some of the cardboard bricks.
Right.
Just in case they're listening. I don't want to leave anyone out.
That'd be lovely. If I may go back to the David Stratton review, just for a fleeting moment. He does make an error, and you must have been a little smug when he did it. He calls Alan Bro. Bro is the correct pronunciation, am I right?
Yeah.
He calls it Bruff. He goes Alan Bruff.
Like so, Rob Bruff.
Yeah.
They are spelt the same. So
they are spelt the
same.
He's
a massive Rob Bruff fan.
Right.
And he just... you know, you could imagine how that confusion might occur. I've said to Alan Bro, it is an unusual locution with his name there. You've got the word Bro. You could also pronounce it bruff. You could also pronounce it brew, like the word through. You
yes.
could also pronounce it brow, like the word bow. All spelled O-U-G-H. It's mystifying to me.
Yeah, well, I just thought he's ragging the film and then he makes a slip-up. It's a kind of good feeling. Going back to Barjas. When Barjas is playing the piano, you, on the commentary, talk about how, at this point, Billy Ray Cyrus fever was gripping the nation.
I think so. I think that's I'm assuming that's accurate.
What's because I sadly missed the Billy Ray Cyrus mania a bit before my time. What's and it's funny how the Cyrus family has remained in the media. I mean, what's her name? Miley Cyrus is everywhere, but not comparable. The Cyrus fever from the 90s to today.
Well, it was sadly, as I recall, entirely centered around only one song. So,
yes.
And indeed, more of a dance. Which wasn't even really a dance. It was just shuffling about. That was really at the heart of it. So I'm assuming, you know, I don't have the Miley Cyrus dossier in front of me, but I'm assuming she's got more than one song.
She would, yeah. She has a couple.
Yeah, there was just, it was Achy Breaky Heart, and then there might have been, you know, Achy Breaky 2. I don't know, but it was really about a phenomenon called boot scooting, which...
Right.
was popular for about 14 months in the early 90s.
Right, I see. Tell me this. What does Barjas order for lunch when I think it's Glen 20?
Would have been, is it what was seen in the footage?
Yep. Oh, no. He's just ordering it. I think it's Glen 20 is Rob Sitch's, he provides the voice for Glen 20, right?
Yep.
He goes, taking lunch orders. He's got a pen and paper. And then Barjas says, don't worry about a pen and paper. My order's simple. Do you know the line thereafter?
No, am I now being quizzed on
somewhat
the show?
He says a shitload of dim sims.
Right.
And I just thought the phrase shitload, you don't hear that too often anymore.
No, I guess you don't. It's a good one though.
It is. I was
think shitload was used a bit more.
Where did I haven't heard a shitload in a long time, and it really I think that's one to bring back.
There's lots of phrases that really should come back round on the Lazy Susan. I can't think of any others at the moment, but it's, you know, I'm constantly hearing an old word and go, oh, let's have that one back.
Right. Well, not, one that's, is it Norgs for...
Norgs? Well, that's it. You know, every time I do a radio show, you know, there's always a debate at some point because someone from Sydney will be on the show and go, it's Norks with a K.
Yeah.
Or go, well, we're from Melbourne, it's Norgs with a G. You know, that's just what a rich and varied country we live in.
Right. You mentioned the Lazy Susan before. Can you name the Chinese restaurant in Barjas?
No. I can't even remember there being one. Was there one?
Well, they mention it. The Golden Retriever?
Oh, that's quite.
You couldn't do that. You couldn't say that today. You couldn't say that.
No,
long.
But I mean, that's me. You see, that's the thing. That's the trouble you get into when something's supposedly satirical. Because it was quite an odd thing when you think about it. Because it's a 90s show, looking back at the 70s
mm-hmm.
and making fun of a show that's made in the 70s, and
right.
we're now watching it in 2013. That's quite. There's a couple of mental leaps you have to make there. So if you watch any of those a show from that era, you'll hear, you know, a line like that for real. So, you know, it was okay. So Barjas is going to be politically incorrect,
right.
they would say. I don't even know if we had the words politically incorrect when that was written.
I got to ask the Anne Burke, A-N-N-E-B-U-R-K, as Anne Burke, A-N-N.
Yeah.
Whose was that?
Remember.
It's a good
sounds
one.
Sounds like something Santa might have thought of, but I don't know.
What about the clipboard joke? The doctor who looks at the clipboard and goes, yep, it's definitely a clipboard. Oh,
I'm not sure. I can't remember.
Oh, it's too bad. Oh, it's a, that's one of my favourite lines. There's a line, and it's dubbed in the Italian version of Barjas.
Oh, yeah.
About the iron strength toilet paper or something like that. They send a Barjas how they have to get the iron strength toilet paper. And then it says, and it's because it's all in Italian and then subtitled, and it says, the type used by the chef from Healthy, Wealthy and Wise, referring to Ian Hewitson.
Yeah, I can't even remember that.
But
I'm assuming it's something we did.
But I was watching the show. Do you watch Huey much?
No. Is he still on?
Amazingly still
healthy,
on.
Healthy, Wealthy and Wise from the early 90s?
That's gone, but now then he had Huey's Kitchen Adventures, which had one of the best...
No, it's spelled H-U-E-Y. Is that who he is?
That's
I
who he is.
I would see that in the... paper, and I'm never quite sure what that is. But no, Huey, good on him.
One of the best pieces of intro music for that Huey's Cooking Adventures. Amazing.
Let's go to it now.
No, sadly, I don't have a copy of it. But then he changed it to Huey's Kitchen.
That's rebranding. That's what the young people call that.
And I couldn't believe it when I was watching, and I couldn't believe that a recipe of his, and I'm not making this up, was a ham and cheese toasted sandwich.
That would have been a very good one, though.
And his secret was buttering the outside of the bread and then toasting it.
He did have a restaurant in St Kilda at one point that did an extremely good burger. I do remember that. Now,
I heard he kicked someone out of that restaurant when they ordered a steak well done. He came out personally from the kitchen and then threw them out.
Well, hopefully there's footage.
I hope so. I got to ask you, you're from New Zealand, right?
Yep.
There seemingly is a fanatical infatuation with the infomercial over there in New Zealand. Am I right?
I don't know. I haven't been there since maybe 3 or 4 years. Is there the Midnight to Dawn infomercial?
Well, yeah. Do you watch the infomercial stations? Because we just got a whole slew of them here in Perth, about 3 or 4 of them, and they just show infomercials.
Oh, you mean a whole channel of just that? Yeah,
yeah.
Right. Well, is that really native to New Zealand?
Well, they're all the voiceover, and most of them are made in New Zealand, like the Soup Mate.
Oh, I see. Well, there's. Who knows? That could be something about getting around the Australian content laws. I understand that, by the way, I'm not quite, I could be wrong.
Sure.
Like Warwick Kappa explaining nuclear physics just for a second. But as I've heard, New Zealand shows can count as Australian content on Australian television. So maybe that's what that is.
Oh, but you don't watch them fanatically? Because I'm a huge fan.
No, I don't. In fact, I hardly ever watch television at all.
Is that right? I thought there was nothing that escaped you as far as TV.
No, when I'm doing a radio show like Get This, I'll dive in and watch everything because it's potential material. But otherwise, I just watch movies on DVD or TV series on DVD.
That's kind of the future. I do notice that
people do now.
Yeah, well, the iView is pretty good. I mean, imagine, I can't imagine sort of, it's Wednesday, 8:30, better drop what I'm doing and watch the TV for half an hour. Something could happen and come up, but with the iView, you can just watch it whenever you like.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of how our ratings work, in that people are going to watch. The shows that rate well are the shows where you have to watch it live, like sports or cooking.
Right.
But, I don't see Game of Thrones anywhere in the ratings, and yet...
Yeah, that's...
I know seems to have seen it. So,
right. It's pretty crazy.
I'm assuming people aren't just watching the telly.
All right, Tony, if you don't mind, I want to throw to a segment, and I need you to do it for me, and I want you to just say, my name is Tony Martin, and yes. I'm... And then just stop, and I'll play the...
Really? Will this get me into legal problems?
This is...
Being investigated by Operation U-Tree.
I wouldn't have thought so.
No. Okay, really? So this is... No one's going to get hurt if I do this?
No, and if they were to, I'd happily cut it out. But no, there's no malarkey here.
All right. I regret to inform you, everyone, that I'm Tony Martin, and I'm...
Tweets. Tweets.
It's a segment I call Taking It to the Tweets. So these are tweets that you have made, and I thought I'd ask you about them.
Oh, okay.
I cut that
recent ones.
Relatively.
Right.
September 5th.
I've been doing this for I think 4 years now. There's doubtless a lot of foolish statements on there.
On September 5th, you tweeted, "I worked on tonight's Upper Middle Bogan on ABC One at 8:30. Hence the gratuitous references to Nintendo 64's GoldenEye."
Yeah, that wasn't drunk when I did that one. Good.
You were a fan of that video game.
Yes, I had the Nintendo 64 GoldenEye. In fact, I wrote a story about my addiction to it in one of my books, and it's one of the things I weirdly get most people will stop me in the street to ask about.
Well, it's a great game, am I right? You've waned off it now?
I don't know, because I haven't played any. I had a brief period with Perfect Dark, and then I've never touched the video. I'm off the stuff. I haven't touched the video game in years. I understand they're brilliant.
They're really good.
Of course they're great. Everyone loves them, but I just go, well, hang on, if I was to do that, I would get no work done.
Right.
I would just be playing, like...
So you have
GoldenEye
nothing now.
I was playing GoldenEye in my sleep. as I'm sure a lot of people were.
Well, I had an addiction to Red Alert 2. Did you ever play Red Alert?
No, see, I don't know that one.
It's on computer. It's like a click and drag game. And you build sort of a base and you fight people and stuff. And I couldn't walk anywhere without, in my mind's eye, dragging a mouse over and clicking it. I'd want to go to the bathroom and I'd sort of visually see a mouse key kick over to the bathroom.
Well, that's
it was
right.
It was a crazy time.
I thought I was the only person driving up Punt Road like Tetris.
What?
The gap between cars.
It's funny, so I was driving up along here, and this is when Guitar Hero first came out, and as I was changing lanes, I could visibly see the colours, you know, like, because have you ever played Guitar Hero?
No.
Well, it's like you have the different colours. You have red, blue, to when to sort of hit the keys.
Yeah.
And as I was changing lanes in my car, I was like, okay, now going into the blue lane, and like, just it was a crazy time.
Well, yeah. I stuck some gold nice stuff in that episode of Upper Middle Bogan. And I remember what Robin Butler, who's the main writer on the show, just looking at me like I was crazy. And you know, there's that line in there about Bags me be odd job, you know. He's shorter, he's harder to hit. She was looking at me like,
I was
saying to her, I know, don't worry, people will get this.
Or yeah, I got it.
People will get it.
Boris is not as small as odd job, but he's halfway in between. He's sort of he's a faux pas. You go Boris, you're committing a faux pas in the Goldeneye.
Well, yeah, it was just a joke.
Yeah, yeah. Who was your character?
You mean in multiplayer?
Yeah, multiplayer.
Well, so I could never get anyone. I could never get any of the women that I've lived with to play GoldenEye with me.
Well, that's yeah. Why do you think that is?
I've never actually played the multiplayer, and I know it's fantastic.
Oh, it's wonderful. You're missing it. And Tim Curry is there's a scientist. Well, you probably notice this in the single player when you're in facility. There is a scientist that looks just like Tim Curry, the actor.
Right.
But
well, there you go. I hadn't noticed that.
Oh well, he's in there. But
cameo.
He's a great. That's a hell of a game. Anything else on the 64? What about like Mario? No, Mario. What was it? Mario 64.
No, I had Mario, and had Mario.
Not the same connection.
That lasted for about 2 or 3 years. I managed to stretch that out.
You got all the stars, I take it.
Yeah. Oh, you know, got through the whole thing eventually, but it did take quite a long time.
What about GoldenEye? Did you get all the cheats?
Oh, you know, I did everything.
Absolutely everything?
I did everything in all of those games.
Aztec, Egyptian.
Yeah, I went around the whole game just slapping while giving the enemy, you know, nuclear missiles. That takes a lot of practice.
That's tough. I got a few. I could never do the train one. If we get the silver gun, which was kind of an erroneous, irrelevant sort of cheat, because you could get the golden gun and I don't know. The silver gun was, I forget what it was.
There was a couple of guns there that were just clearly the same gun.
And then there was just
the gold gun and the silver gun. They were the same, weren't they, really?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And then the throwaway cheat, the DK mode, you know, when you have to complete runway in about 8 hours. If
I remember all this now.
It sparks, you're like, oh, there's cheats in this game. And yeah, that was a hell of a game. But Mario Kart 64?
No, I never did Mario Kart.
Yeah, it's more.
I had one called Multi Something Championship, like one where you had to drive around a mountain. That was the first game I ever had. So you know, I think it came with the machine.
All right, well, let's move on to July 12th of this year, and you said after Green Hornet, you'd think they'd realize no one wants to see an inept hero constantly getting saved by a sidekick who doesn't like him. Do you remember what film you were referring to with that?
Yeah, it was The Lone Ranger.
Oh, no, it was too. You actually saw that?
Yeah, I did. Right. I love things with trains, big buses.
Actually, you made a tweet thereafter comparing it to Wild Wild West.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Your thoughts on Wild Wild West? It has a train in it.
Yeah, but they're both terrible in the same way, in that you don't really care about anything that's going on.
But they made Wild Wild West, I was shocked to hear that made money. And he turned down Will Smith turned down The Matrix to do that film?
Well.
He turned down the role of Keanu Reeves' role in The Matrix in favor of Wild Wild West.
Well, yes. Well, The Lone Ranger was based on, you know, and then, of course,
yep.
I was, set upon on Twitter by comic fans going, well, in fact, whatever universe, The Green Hornet, what comic universe does he exist in? He's descended from the Lone Ranger.
Oh, really?
That's a deliberate strategy.
I only know that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are a derivative of Daredevil. Did you know that?
No.
Are you a fan of the Turtles?
Not really a fan of the Turtles, or didn't really grow up with, aside from Spider-Man, never really read any Marvel, only read DC.
Well, you're a Batman fan then?
Yeah.
Did you like
the DC characters? Although, you know, as soon as you say this, you've got people going, "What? What are you thinking?"
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to retract any more trouble, but yeah, there was that. The point of that tweet was that, yeah, I remember seeing the Green Hornet, and it was an interesting idea for a film. You know, okay, let's make the hero an inept fool who's constantly... It's like Inspector Clouseau and Kato.
Sure.
And it was an interesting idea, but it was incredibly unsatisfying to a general audience.
Yeah, I that was when 3D was in its infancy. Yeah, I remember it was like, okay, break now, 3D section, and then we'll come back to it. Do you like Seth Rogen films?
I've liked some of them, yeah.
Right.
Sure. I love Superbad. I think that's hilarious.
That is a good film. That's probably their best. I remember that just had a really good tempo to that film. It just kept building and building and building, and then it had a real melodramatic ending, a real sort of sentimental ending.
Well, it's got this fantastic... You know, it's having its cake and eating it too, because it probably has been well superseded by now, but at the time it was incredibly dirty talking film.
Yeah, very.
And yet it was quite sweet natured at the centre of it. It was a fun combination.
And do you like Bill Hader? You know, he plays one of the cops.
He's great. What did he do? What was he in recently where he was Australian?
Oh,
I think it was Portlandia.
Oh, right. I have only watched a few episodes of that program.
I might actually have the wrong show, because I've watched a lot of things.
Portlandia makes sense. There's another SNL guy on there.
Yeah, I think it's in Portlandia that he's playing an Australian character, and it's like it's that accent that, in one sense, the accent is like a perfect Australian accent, and then in the next sense, it's like, Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins.
Right.
But it doesn't matter, because it's just a funny character.
What about other sort of, like, not Seth Rogen, but Judd Apatow? Like, they're sort of joined at the hip, those two. Did you ever see their TV stuff, like Freaks and Geeks or something like that? That is a great show.
Watched that a couple of times.
In fact, the interview I've got after you is, did you ever watch the comments?
Judd Apatow.
No, sadly, not that big. But some of the director's commentary, they had fans come in and do a director's commentary. Did you ever?
No, good idea.
Yeah, so I'm going to have either one or hopefully all three of them in. They're in the US, so I'll have it over phone. But I think that'd be kind of cool. But that's a great show, right?
Yeah, no, Freaks and Geeks is a really good show.
And it never really took off over here at all.
No, it was on at like 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
But I've put a lot of people onto it, normal people, not like comedy nerds, citizens. I've put actual citizens onto that show, and they've loved it.
What about Undeclared, sort of the spiritual sequel?
I didn't really care for that, because I found the guy from... it's quite an irony. The guy who's in Sons of Anarchy, who's Jack.
Charlie Hannan, or whatever, the English guy.
Terrible. And I'm going, that is the phoniest sounding English accent.
Yeah, I thought he was American doing English too.
And then when he did Sons of Anarchy, I went, yes, he's great in that, because I'm going, he's using his normal voice, but apparently he is actually English.
Yeah, he is. I couldn't believe it too. I was like, I remember showing it to friends and they're going, oh, this guy's a terrible, doing a fake British accent. Sounds terrible.
But I had a lot of people say, I remember Alan Bro, he was one, saying, oh, Undeclared is even better than Freaks and
Geeks. Well, I
didn't think so.
I think it's funnier because it's a 25-minute show and it's a little bit more punchy, perhaps a bit more broad, but I don't know, I like
it. It's got that sort of halfway between a sitcom and Freaks and Geeks.
Freaks and Geeks is the better show. Whether it's more fun or funnier, there's a debate, but I do think Freaks and Geeks is a much, much better show just as far as watching it and enjoying it.
Yeah, it is a good one.
And I think the idea of having Biff from Back to the Future as a gym teacher, I thought that was just, that was organic.
And
that made sense.
Joe Flaherty from
Second City
TV.
Yeah.
A great idea, because there's always, I know Apatow is always on about SCTV, and he was on the Ben Stiller show, and that was a kind of very SCTV influenced show.
It seems like very little comedy stuff escapes you, television.
You'd be surprised. It's just, this whole thing's that I haven't seen. Wonder shows, and never seen any of that.
Wait a minute. Was that the sound of Tony Martin feeding the cat? Or baking a cake? Let's listen again.
never seen any of that.
I think that was the sound of a wooden spoon banging the side of a plastic cat dish after having scooped the contents of a tin of cat food. Here it is again.
Never seen any of that.
You know, I could be wrong. Please comment below as to what you think it might be.
What about
all things that I just have not got around to?
I remember on Joy of Sets.
I don't have to work, though.
Oh, right, that's true.
I'd be happy to. I would be quite happy to just sit and watch everything, but yeah. No, I'd never get anything done.
But I was going to say, Joy of Sets, you found a show called the Nazi show. What is it? Heil Führer? No, Führer.
Heil Honey, I'm Home.
Heil Honey, I'm Home.
Well, the problem with that is you look at it and it looks like something that we've made up, but it's
I didn't think it was made up at the time, but no, it's a real show. It actually had a number of it's not like they had one episode and pulled the pin like that. What was it, Doug Mulray show? You know,
there was 8 episodes of Heil Honey, I'm Home, but only one was shown.
Well, I'm not surprised, but they would exist. Those 8 episodes would be somewhere.
You'd like to think that they've been kept.
Sure.
Where?
Well, here's another. Going back to the tweets, 20th of June, you said you actually retweeted someone, and he said, "Baywatch publicity shot. Can anyone explain the guy behind Hasselhoff?"
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I never watched Baywatch. So
no, you didn't. Oh, Baywatch has actually got some redeeming qualities.
I'm sure it has, but you know, Phelpsy for one. But it's got
Trevor Hendy.
I know Pang, because that Sam Pang put that up, and he got.
Yes.
I saw he got jumped on Twitter. I went, "Oh mate, should have done your homework before you launched that one."
It's new me.
It was funny, but people who had seen Baywatch were just like, "You're an idiot."
It's new me. It's he's like he was the actual. He was sort of the lifeguard consultant on set.
Pang walked into that one.
Yeah.
I warned him.
Yeah. Well, you can't blame him. 15th of June. This is sort of a not so much funny, but Patton Oswalt nails the debate on jokes, thieves, heckling.
Yeah,
but I was just thinking joke stealing.
That's a fantastic piece of writing from Patton Oswalt.
Right. He's quite funny.
He's very funny. He's done, if people aren't across his stand-up, there are 4 albums. The first one, Feeling Kind of Patton, there. Werewolves and Lollipops is the second one. I think that may be his most famous and best album. But, yeah, he's a pretty funny guy. But he also wrote a book, I can't remember what it was called, about a year ago, and it had a fantastic story in it, a true story about the worst gig, you know, comedy gig, or the worst season of live comedy that he ever did. And, you know, there's a lot of that about, of people going, "What's the worst gig you did?" And
yeah.
Everyone's got a horror story. But this, I reckon, might be the best thing I've read
I
in
haven't...
that line.
Oh, that's right. Well, I was just thinking about joke stealing. Have you seen or heard? Because I think there's a documentary or maybe talk of one just kind of going into it. Because I was a big fan of Robin Williams growing up. Live on Broadway, was really good.
Yeah.
And then just to hear that he shamefully steals everything.
Well, that's quite a broad statement you've made there.
Sorry.
It has to be said that he does have that reputation, and there was quite a detailed article about it in the Rolling Stone a few years ago where it had, I remember things in that article like comedians saying that if Robin Williams came to do a guest spot, that they would deliberately do their worst material, and it got so bad that if he was going to do a guest spot at a club, he would have to sit in his car outside until just before he went on.
I was crushed.
So there's a lot of stories like that. I can't actually think of an example of him stealing someone's jokes, but
I think there's a Billy Connolly one where he talks about golf, and when he's talking about golf and he's doing a Scottish accent, I was like, this sounds, I didn't know the material of Billy Connolly's, but I was like, this is not his, perhaps.
Well, I don't have the evidence to present a case, but
no.
I would have to agree that he does have that reputation.
Right, what about Bill Hicks and the Dennis Leary thing? You know about Bill Hicks, right?
Well, it's kind of interesting you say that, because I went to Edinburgh Festival in 91, and I got off a plane at 4:30 in the afternoon, and I've been going for 24 hours, and at 6 o'clock I was sitting in, me and Mick Malloy were both sitting in the audience for Dennis Leary.
Yeah.
And he came out and was amazing to us. And...
Oh, you like his stuff?
Well, I hadn't seen really anything like that before. I hadn't seen
of
or
course.
Heard of him, and we just went to it and went, "Whoa, that was great." And then about a week later, we saw Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was like seeing Sha-na-na.
Was it that obvious?
And then seeing Elvis.
Right. And it was that obvious that it was a very similar act?
But Dennis Leary was an actor before he was a stand-up, and thinking about his act and watching a subsequent special I did, it's almost like you're watching an actor acting being a stand-up.
Yeah.
Or at least, I don't know if that's accurate or not, but in comparison to Bill Hicks, that's what it felt like, because Bill Hicks was so fluid. We saw him in a really good show where it was really going off, and he just went all over the place. He did bits of material and then dropped it and went into just improv for a while. It was really interesting.
Did you see the, I think it was on the ABC, the Bill Hicks American, Bill Hicks, the Ultimate American or something like that?
The version we see of Bill Hicks now is slightly distorted, I think. Whenever you see a documentary about Bill Hicks, they show that footage of him, you know, in the cowboy gear storming through the flames like some warrior of comedy. And that was only a kind of a pose that he adopted at the very end.
That's one of his last recorded specials, that one in England, yeah.
Yeah, and the Bill Hicks, you know, the by and large 95% of Bill Hicks' gigs would just be a guy coming on doing 50 minutes in a smoky club.
Yeah.
Not a guy, you know, riding a motorcycle out of the apocalypse.
Yeah, but you did see him live.
His reputation has been elevated so high that people now, the cool thing is to knock him down. Bill Hicks, overrated.
Yeah.
You go, Jesus, I mean, it would have been nice if he had been overrated during his lifetime.
Right, yeah.
Because he was, you know, he had a pretty hard time.
Well, have you seen his last interview? He's on some Houston, it's on YouTube. He's in a Houston community TV station, and he's just answering phone calls. And he looks, he's obviously late stage of cancer, does not look healthy. And it's just, it's worth a look.
Okay, well, I know he came out here only less than a year before he died, and he was on AA Saturday. That was one of the weirdest things I ever saw. I think that is on YouTube, actually, was at one point.
Well, I'm not sure, but one thing that my father is, he always talks about this one interview that you and Mick Molloy did with Adam West. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do remember that.
And I think you called him, and he's giving an interview, and then halfway through he had to stop and go somewhere, but he called you back, and...
Oh, yeah, it was great, because me and Mick were both massive fans of Adam West, and we had been trying to get him on our radio show for about a year and a half, and finally, I remember, should I tell this? I mean, I don't want this to make Adam West sound bad, because he's a fantastic guy.
Yeah.
But I remember we had to deal with his agent, and his agent said, right, it'll be a... It was like one of those little, like Hank Kingsley's agent, the little old guy on Larry Sanders. It was like, okay, it's got to be $200. It was like $200. We had to pay $200 before Adam West would talk to us.
Yep.
And then, so we sent a check. Like, I think we, because, you know, this is maybe just before the internet. So we like posted a check, and then we go, okay, can we do the interview? And then like the guy's like, I gotta wait for the check to clear. So it was like another week till we waited for the check to clear. You're going, wow, this guy, what is he gonna get? He's gonna get like $20.
Yeah.
That'll be his cut. And then finally we were allowed to talk to Adam West, and it was like he was in a car yard. He was buying like a Land Rover or something. So he was literally doing the interview while simultaneously just buying a car.
Well, that's what I remember. I've always been told. And
there's whole bits of the interview which is just Adam West buying a car.
Right.
But he's great. I don't want to make him sound like
he's fantastic.
He's a lovely man and really funny. And if you've ever seen him interviewed, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I think so. Well, have you ever seen the sitcom that Conan O'Brien wrote for him?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. How did that not...
It's simultaneously hilarious and sad because it didn't get made. And you go,
look well.
He could have done with that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But I was also... the Batman movie, which I think is probably the finest piece of work they do. You know when he's like running with a bomb and he says, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. Don't you think that sort of really has parallels with the third actual Dark Knight movie?
I mean, I'm sure...
You think that's conscious?
Who was a fan of Adam West when that scene was happening in the cinema would have probably have yelled that out at the top of their voice.
Yeah, I'd say so. The Dark Knight's obviously the crown jewel of that trilogy, right?
Yeah, well, I don't want to say anything against those films because then I'll have to defend my position against Justin Hamilton.
Oh, what?
I'm not up to that.
I thank you to him for putting me in touch with you. Well, he's a huge fan of all three.
He loves them.
Yeah.
I don't mind them, but, you know, they're not my favourite films.
What is your favourite films?
Favourite films? I love, even everyone knows the list, I've always asked this, Spinal Tap, Whisnell and I, things like that, Singing in the Rain, that's a good one.
What about, like, a good bad film? Like, what's the worst
good
film you've
bad
seen?
Film?
Yeah, like an Ed Wood feature or...
I mean, like a bad film that's fun to watch.
Yeah.
I saw one recently that was fascinating called Pink Angels, which is a gay bikie movie made by Crown International in the early 70s. And it's got a really shocking, genuinely shocking ending. But for the most part, it's played in a weird tone that sort of veers between comedy and sort of Herschel Gordon Lewis territory. It's a really odd film. Most of these films, though... The problem with things like this, I mean, one of the things that makes Plan 9 from Outer Space so great is that you can watch the whole thing in one go and not get bored.
Yeah.
Whereas most bad films, it's like fun for 20 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Plan 9, you like Plan 9?
It's funny. It's one of those films that where you change your opinion because if you're my age... It's quite a significant film because it's probably the first bad film you saw, like really bad film. I mean, it used to tour around like a circus act.
Well, now it's The Room.
Yeah, and now thanks to videos and you know, in the pre-video era when to see a film, you would either see it on television or go and see it projected. Those sort of films weren't around.
Yeah.
A film that incompetent. So people would go along, and it would bring the house down,
right.
Mostly because it was quite novel to see something like that. Now it feels a bit cruel to because Ed Wood was so sincere.
Oh, yeah.
You'll often see a big, terrible Hollywood pile of shit and go, you know what? I reckon Ed Wood was more sincere about what he was doing. You know, his whole theory about how the humans are destroying the planet, it's quite... The problem is it's being said by a man in tights
who's
standing next to a wooden table on a spaceship.
Well, that's... I always get just blown away by the uniform. How could a whole alien race of people agree on we're going to wear the one uniform? That's it. I just think it's...
Oh, it's hilarious. It's hilarious, but... And it's so much fun to laugh at that movie. But who wouldn't want to take Ed Wood out and, you know, buy him a drink?
Oh, totally.
What a great guy.
Tommy
made a lot of movies in impossible circumstances and was, by all accounts, a lovely bloke.
It seems that way. Going back to your tweets, 28th of June, you said, have been given a disabled hotel room. Every time I emerge from the bathroom, I expect to find an angry person in a wheelchair waiting.
Well, yeah, that was because we were making the Ross Noble show, and it was so seat of the pants that we would just be showing up in places, and it would be like, right, where can we stay? And sometimes we'd be staying at like Faulty Towers. Sometimes we'd have to stay, at five-star hotels because that was the only place where we could get rooms for 16 people on an hour's notice. So.
Sure.
At one point, I got put into into the hotel room with I don't want to use the wrong terminology and offend everyone, but...
No, I think disabled's okay.
You know, the disabled toilets with the giant rails.
The rail and a lot of space.
And it was because it was the only room that was available. But you do, even when you're in a hotel room, you feel slightly guilty.
Yeah.
Like when you...
Have you ever used one outside?
I've had the... I'm sure I'm not the only person who's had the actual situation from Larry David where you go, there's no one around in this cinema.
And you've been caught?
And one on a Tuesday afternoon, and then, there's a guy outside. That's happened. And then,
my thought is...
Who doesn't immediately adopt a limp?
I just think, who... I mean, it's not like they can't wait. It's not like their patience is what is... It's, you know, they can still just wait and you come out and you apologise. But I'm always fearful that you'll leave something not quite so, you know. Someone will come in to use it after you and they'll have to adjust something and they'll take a fall or something terrible and then they'll just have that grainy footage of you on the news leaving the bathroom.
And, someone in my position on the celebrity D-list has to constantly be aware of things that might be misinterpreted like that.
Where you
know, I'll end up on, on YouTube, like Alec Baldwin when he abuses one of his kids on a phone message.
Horrible.
You know, that could happen to me at any moment.
Right. Yeah.
I'm aware of that.
When it works out, it's a huge payoff.
But I would just, because I'm constantly in situation, Larry David-ish situations in public, and the best thing to do, as everyone does in comedies, go, I'll use this myself before word gets out that I was, telling a woman at the discount chemist warehouse that, in fact, her badge is a lie, which I found myself doing one day when this, I was buying a medication that was like, it was like $16 more than it is at a normal chemist.
Right.
I remember it was a classic Larry David, and I'm going, oh, my God, if anyone was recording this on their phone.
Ed Cavalier is a friend of yours, and he's done a film called Scumbus, right?
He's made two films. He did a film called Scumbus, which was shown on Channel 10 last year,
yeah.
And then he subsequently made a film called Border Protection Squad, which is on only a slightly larger budget. I feel bad saying that because it sounds like I'm saying it's a cheap movie, and Ed's always, don't mention the budget, because the fact is that both the films look way more expensive than they actually were.
Right. Did you have any involvement in them?
Yeah, I'm in both of them, but I didn't. I had nothing to do with the script or anything.
Right.
I improvised. Yeah, there's a line I didn't even remember saying when we were filming, because there was a bit where I was just sitting at a computer in Scumbus just talking shit. Yeah. And what do you know? Some of it's in the movie.
In your in the podcast with Justin Hamilton, I think it's called Tony Martin Supremacy. I don't know when that was done. That was done quite a while ago.
Oh, God. Yes.
You talk about
defamatory.
No. You talk about a time you wrote a script, and you showed it to Rob Sitch, and he's reading it. And as he's giving you appraisal, he's shredding it.
Yeah, he was shredding it. He wasn't shredding it. I have to point out, he wasn't doing that to be mean.
No,
it was just that he happened to be shredding it while he was talking to me.
Consciously, though,
he didn't realize. He would be mortified if he thought that it was
If I may, what was that script about?
That was a film that I wrote, which had a lot of good things in it and a lot of bad things in it. And I actually had Rob and a couple of other people I know sort of sit me down and go, look, I don't think you should do this.
Do you think it's at all salvageable?
They were right.
All right. Not at all salvageable?
There's a lot of good stuff in there, actually, because there was a lot of... Well, if I do say so myself, but it was written for specific actors, and I remember there was a lot of good Bob Franklin material in it. But it was... Greg Sitch is constantly saying, why don't you dust that one off?
Right.
But, I mean, this is nothing unusual. The problem is I remember when I was telling that story to Justin, we got to the end, I'm going, hang on, I don't want people to think there's anything, anyone who's a writer would go, yeah, we've all got scripts like that.
Right. You just can't divulge any of the plot at all? We'd prefer not.
Divulge any of the plot. There was something to do with sports in it. Oh, no, it was about actors. It was about amateur actors.
Uh-huh.
It was, in fact, I without realizing it was a similar kind of a premise to one of my favorite films, which is To Be or Not to Be,
right?
Where just out on Criterion Blu-ray, which is about where a group of actors in World War II have to, their acting skills are put to serious use when they have to fool the Nazis.
Oh.
It's quite an amazing film because it was made, before the war was over, and it was considered quite...
Kind of like a Team America of sorts as well.
Yeah, it almost is, of its day. Although it's not as harsh as that. But
yeah, absolutely.
It just is shocking that it's,
Is that sort of your vein, South Park? Is that your comedy?
I don't really watch... I used to watch South Park when it started, and every now and then I'll just see a bit of it, and I do like it. I love the movie.
Yeah,
that was those songs were great, but I saw the Book of Mormon when I was in London. That was absolutely brilliant.
Really? Yeah, I've heard only good things about that. I think I won a Tony Award for
it. Yeah, it's really good. It's actually exceptionally good.
I know tickets are expensive. How much did you pay to go to that?
I
I got some of them cheap tickets in Leicester Square. I got a ticket for £45.
Wow.
Yes, it's a lot of money, but I think the tickets were going for like £95.
They were a lot. I remember just looking it up, and it was hundreds.
Well, you know, I've given up on it. I'm going, you won't get tickets. And then they just do this thing where they have all these discount places in Leicester Square, and if you're there at the right time, they'll suddenly go, oh, we got 100 tickets.
Did you buy a single ticket, or did you go...
I went with someone else. And then when I was there, I bumped into Andrew Mercado, was there on the same night. But we had, like, the worst seats in, literally, in the theatre. Like, I'm going, hey...
Restricted view?
There must be, like, I was going, I can't believe these are... I was expecting to be taken to an underground car park, and it was just going to be, like, an amateur theatre version of it. But it was right up in the top corner. Well, it wasn't a restricted view, but it was as far away from the stage as it could be.
Right.
But it was such a great show that, like,
didn't
in a minute, I just didn't care.
Oh, okay.
And the people who were sitting next to were these really religious American people who were thoroughly offended, but sat for the whole thing, and they were quite entertaining in themselves.
Oh, I can imagine. Has anyone ever approached you with a script? Like, I'm just thinking, any questions for Ben? Did you see that film?
Yeah, I saw that film.
What did you think of it?
I liked some things about it.
Right.
I what I really liked about it was the support. You know, the even small parts were well acted.
Lockie Hume is a best actor in Australia at the minute, I think.
He's Mr. Acting, but then like Alan Brough did not have a single line in that film, and yet he was really memorable. Gave a really great performance. Even like Sean Lynch from The Shambles? I might have the wrong person there. Whoever it was who played the hot air balloon operator was hilarious.
Right.
So in a way, it reminded me of. You know, to go back to my pretentious 40s references for a moment, it was like a Preston Sturges movie where, you know, even the guy, you know, the valet out the front of the hotel has a funny line.
It right.
was like a really good cast. Christian Clarke was really funny in that. Ed Cavalier was funny in that. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, I know I've heard all the arguments as to why, you know, people don't like it.
People really turned on that one.
Yeah, they didn't. No, a lot of people didn't like it, but I had a lot of laughs.
I was shocked. I remember watching it, and I was very surprised it had come from the likes of Santa, Rob Sitch, Tom Glasner. It just didn't feel like a film that they would make. Their sort of vein, but anyway.
Well, they hadn't made a film for. I don't think Stanley Kubrick took so long between them.
Yeah, well,
but, you know, they are very busy people. I think they've got about 12 things at the moment that they're a lot harder working than me.
Right, so what? And now you've got this show coming up, and you're more excited about it, or just?
Oh, I'm excited about it. I know it's a funny story because it's been quite a popular story for years, and I always get asked, you know, to read it out, and it's kind of impossible to read out because there's so many character voices you have to do. It's one you really have to act out.
Right.
So that's what I'm going to do in this festival. So I know, I think the material is good, but, you know, that's not to say that I can't still cock it up.
Right.
But it's a fringe festival. That's, you know, the fringe festival, I don't want to just come on and do normal stand-up.
Yeah, I was about to say, like normal stand-up, I mean, that's a tough game. I mean, I think you talk about in your book when you were opening for Judith Lewis.
I don't think I've ever been brilliant at it. I've always been a kind of a pretty average stand-up, but I love doing it, and I've always worked quite hard at it. But I don't think, I think I've got a long way to go in the stand-up department. I do it. I try and do at least, you know, I have this theory that you should do, if you do less than 5 gigs a year, you really have to hand back your stand-up license.
Right.
I try and do at least 5 a year. Sometimes I'll do 10. But, you know, that's ideally, I would be doing 60. I'd be on the kind of schedule that Justin Hamilton.
He performs a lot.
Yeah,
right?
And when you're doing between 60 and 200 gigs a year, you get really match fit. And
I would say
that's not where I am, but that's I'd love to be.
And
doing
why wouldn't you do say? 50
well, because I've gone through periods of doing stand up, and whenever I've done it, I've tried to not do anything else. You know, I don't want to be the weekend stand up.
Right.
So, you know, what I would do, and I probably might do it after I. Depends on how this show goes, because if this show works, I might do more of this. But if it's, you know, if it's a turkey,
do you think it really could it be a? I don't think.
You never know. I don't. I always go into everything assuming it's going to be a disaster, so that whatever happens, it's usually
it's a
good.
Safe bet, right.
But it's just if it is if. But I would like. I've been doing stand up down at the Shelf at Hammo's night, Hammo and Adam Richards' night at the Toffin Town in Melbourne, and I've really been enjoying that. So I would like to do more of that, but I don't want to just, you know, be a dilettante about it.
Right.
I have to dive in.
Who's a really good stand-up Australian nowadays in Europe?
Nowadays?
Yeah.
Well, it depends what you like. I mean, Judith Lucy is probably my favourite.
You know, I saw Judith Lucy at the supermarket the other day.
Was she doing 10 minutes of new material?
No, nothing like that. She bought a big wad of toilet paper. I was shocked. I was like, wow, that's like 24 rolls, you know?
Should have done that. I don't know. I mean, probably my favourite Australian stand-up is by an American, which is an album called Plaid Pants and Psychopaths by Franklin Ajai, which was recorded in Sydney at Kinsellis in 1985. And it's such a cheap...
Hello? Whoa. Tony, you there?
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. Great. Anyway, thanks, Tony. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Can you hear me? Because I think I dropped out.
Can you hear me? Yeah. Well, I can hear you. So that's really good. Good luck with the show.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. See ya. Bye.